Welcome to the show. I'm Brad Johnson, and this is the Do Business, Do Life podcast. I believe in the and approach to life and business instead of the either or. This show is my attempt to help financial advisors create unlimited growth and freedom in their life and their business through wide-ranging conversations with some of the most brilliant and interesting people on the planet. We refer to this mission as DBDL, doing business and doing life.
What up, y'all? Today, Brad's going to be talking with Robert Sophia. He is the co-founder and CEO of Snappy Kraken, which is an award-winning marketing technology firm that provides advisors with a complete digital marketing system to foster and deepen relationships with their clients and prospects, while also making it easier for advisors to fulfill all their marketing needs in one place. Snappy Kraken's been ranked as the most innovative marketing platform for advisors by Investment News. It's also been ranked as the best overall content marketing company for 4 years running. And in this conversation with Robert Sophia, you're going to learn one, how to convert cold traffic into meaningful client relationships and why video is the best way to build trust and drive in-person meetings. Part of that conversation is going to include a simple strategy to increase website conversions by 400%. Two, you're going to walk away with Robert's best advice for acquiring top talent and incentivizing performance that can unlock exponential company growth. And three, the impact that AI will have on financial advisors and how you can use technology to forge meaningful connections, create a great client experience, and scale the human side of financial advice. Now, before we get to the show, we've got a special gift for DBDL listeners. We've got a bunch of copies of Robert's book, How Blend Out, From Ordinary to Irresistible, How Advisors Can Market Like the Greatest Brands in the World, and we're going to be giving them away until they're all gone. So if you want to get your free copy, here's what you're going to do next. You're going to first text the number 54, so the number, not the word, to 785-800-3235. That's the DBDL Insider phone number, and you'll also be able to find it in the show notes. We're going to send you a text back asking you to leave an honest rating and review of the show. And once we've done that, we're going to grab your mailing address and pop a copy in the mail for you. So please note, text message and data rates may apply. You can opt out of receiving text messages at any time by applying stop to any message you receive. Also, quick apology to our international listeners outside of the US. Shipping prices are crazy high. We can only ship these domestically. So please support Robert and just go grab a copy at your local bookstore or on Amazon. If you'd like the show notes to this episode, including links to all the resources, books mentioned, and people discussed, you can grab those at bradleyjohnson.com/54. As always, thanks for listening. And without further delay, today's conversation with Robert Sophia.
Welcome back to another episode of Do Business, Do Life. We have Robert Sophia here with us today. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hey, Brad. I like the name of the show. Do Business, Do Life. It sounds like balanced people who understand their priorities would listen to this show.
That is the goal. My prior show, The Elite Advisor Blueprint, obviously, there was a lot that translated to this show. But one of the things, you know, as I've gotten older as a husband, as a dad, and you've been in finance just as long as I have, you know, we both really grew up in this space. And unfortunately, sometimes we see success and production kind of start to eat people alive. And, you know, as I thought about kind of the concept for this show, it was, we want to build businesses, help advisors build businesses that bless their lives, that don't become their lives. And I've seen the fun versions of that play out over the years. And unfortunately, I've seen the not so fun versions where people don't get that right. So any thoughts on that as just we dive in here today? Because I know you've worked with, at this point, thousands of financial advisors all across the country at this stage in your career.
Yeah, I have. And business is great. I love working with advisors. I love the industry, but I love my life and my family more. And I think when you get out of balance and your career is everything to you, your family life suffers. If you keep your family, your health, your overall lifestyle as the priority, and your business fuels that, I think you end up doing better business. So I don't work the crazy hours and run myself into the ground. I don't neglect my family. I limit my travel and I stay happy. So I'm happy at home and I'm happy at work. And I never let it get out of control. And I think that's really important. Everybody doesn't have the same priorities, but for me, it's been key to staying in this industry and to grow professionally because I don't burn myself out.
Couldn't agree more. And there's always seasons. Obviously, when Snappy Kraken was very much a startup, I'm sure you had seasons where that balance got a little out of whack, but it's basically course correcting, you know, and not letting it go too far down that path.
Yeah, that's everything. You know, I think about those circus acts where they're walking a tightrope and they've got the big pole, you know, and there's like weights going on each side, you know, and they have to keep adjusting. Every once in a while, of course, something gets out of balance, but you said it, course correct. And to be successful in business and life, right, keeping with the theme of your podcast, you have to adjust both of those things on a regular basis.
Yeah. We were chatting before we hit record here, and let's take a little trip down memory lane, younger version of Brad, younger version of Robert. So I don't remember exactly how we first connected. I do remember, obviously, you were working with the Frost Brothers, and you had really taken some of what had helped them build their financial services firm and Platinum Marketing. And you were really the guy running that was kind of teaching some of these best practices to advisors out there. And I remember we first connected in person. I think it was Orlando, where you guys were doing your big annual conference. And you were kind of emceeing it. You popped up, shared some client referral strategies. And it was really cool. Like, that was very ahead of its time, I think, because that was like, trying to think, probably 2010-ish, I think, when we first connected.
Yeah.
So let's go maybe down those that I think a lot of people today know you from Snappy Kraken, but they don't always know kind of the origin story of Robert and how he got in this business. So would you mind sharing a bit of that as we dive in?
Yeah. You know, a lot of it inspired Snappy Kraken because it was a consulting business for advisors, and it was fed by the financial planning practice, the strategies, the ideas. They were all tested in the field. And then in turn, that fed the financial planning practice because we built up this big agency to do all this work and content. And so we would give the best of it to the practice too. And so it was a virtuous cycle. And so Tom and Rob Frost were business partners with me in the Platinum Advisor Strategies, was what it was called. And then they also ran their practice. And then I ran marketing and the back office at their practice. So we both had two gigs, and they were inextricably linked. And it was great. We scaled that business up to about 800 advisors at its peak. It was a good lifestyle business. It was a good coaching firm. And then I outgrew it and I wanted to go into technology. And, you know, we ultimately made the decision to split up. But I learned a lot in this business during the first, well, let's see, I started in about 2004. And, you know, we scaled that business from about $125 million in ARR to about $650 million. It's funny. I said AUR. That's ARR. See, I'm in software now. ARR is annual.
Yeah, it's okay.
AUM. AUM. There we go. In AUM. So in less than 5 years, which is a pretty big leap to go from 125 to 650 in AUM in a single practice with just a couple of advisors. But it was because great marketing, great systems, great advisors. And that's what I believe in and still do. And so now at Snappy Kraken, I work with great advisors and I help them build great systems and great marketing. And it's just, I do it at a bigger scale. Instead of doing it for the Frost Brothers and 800 advisors, now I do it for north of 6,000 advisors.
Awesome. Like, if you go back to some of your greatest hits, because as much as financial services has evolved a ton from those days, there's still a lot that stays true to today. It's just maybe delivered in a different way. What were some of those greatest hits? I know you guys were super heavy. I think the first time I heard a real, not just a one-off client cloning, client referral strategy, but a very regimented, like, here is our process that creates predictable results. It was really from you at that Platinum experience back then. But what were some of your greatest hits that are still true today that you might be able to share with advisors?
Yeah, I try to still educate about those things, but I also try to automate them now. And so the principles apply. It's the method that's evolved. But when I think about the way we used to do it, it was bricks and mortar. The process is now digital, but it's the exact same thing. So if you think about a growth flywheel, that's how I frame what we do at Snappy Kraken now. There's three phases in this growth flywheel. Phase one is the audience. That's everybody that listens to you, everybody that opens, clicks, reads, consumes what you put out. Then that audience, the bigger it is, the more opportunities you have to turn people in that audience into clients. And those clients are the next phase. And then if you do a really great job for those clients and you set up ways systematically to harvest referrals from those clients and you create a great experience, so they want to give you referrals, those clients help you grow the audience even more. And so it's a virtuous cycle. The audience grows, they turn into clients, they help you build the audience further. And the more you can get those cycles feeding into each other, the faster your business grows. And underneath those three buckets, there's different phases of the relationship you go through, right? With an audience, first you got to get noticed, then you got to get their contact information, then you got to build credibility and start a conversation with them, and so forth. So what I remember, what we did in the business was we would grow that audience by things like client events and referrals and charity events and seminars. And now we do it with SEO and advertising and social media. And it's still building an audience. It's still getting, you still got to get noticed. You still got to get their contact information, but maybe instead of registering for a seminar, they're Google searching, they're clicking to your website, and they're opting in for a download. You're still getting the lead. So it's a question of how you build that cycle in your business. And for some advisors, certain strategies work better for them. And for others, those strategies won't work. And so we're always trying to not only find strategies that work for individual advisors, but broadly what works for the entire advisor community. And there are some things that do work for everybody. And that's what we try to automate and systemize.
Cool. So let's go to I remember like you did a lot of wine tasting events back in the day. So let's kind of hit that stage between audience where you say, hey, get noticed, obviously grab their information so you can connect with them. What are some of the best strategies you've seen to take it from online to offline to the in-person? I know you can do like virtual wine tastings, things like that over Zoom. And you know, we've got some advisors that have done that over the years, but I still think there's nothing that quite touches the in-person once you get to that stage in the process. So what are some of the best strategies you've seen there, and maybe some of the best events, because you guys did a ton of different versions of that you might be able to share with some advisors out there?
Yeah, well, your question is actually really insightful, because there is nothing quite like a real conversation. And when you look somebody in the whites of the eyes and shake their hand, or you hear them present in person, or you're at an event and you see them hugging their clients, like those things make a deeper impression than getting to a website and clicking to download a lead magnet. So This is where a lot of advisors get disappointed with online marketing, because a lot of marketing companies will get them clicks or get them leads, but they don't have a good system for making those into meaningful relationships. And events are a great way to do that. Once you have them opted in, you can invite them to events. And sometimes, because it's not a relationship that started in person, you have to work it a little harder for a while digitally to get to that phase. So you ask what's working. I'll tell you, do a big study every year. We have data points on millions of emails and hundreds of thousands of campaigns that are running. So, you know, actually just this month, we launched our State of Digital. And just to give you some idea, there were 250 million data points, a quarter of a billion data points that we looked at. So you've got 67 million emails, 38 million contacts, 600,000 campaigns. So when you ask me what works, I'm going to tell you based on the data. Okay. And what's really fascinating to me is that with digital leads, opt-ins, social media messages, anything you get, knowing that there's a lack of trust there because they haven't warmed up to you yet, you haven't earned the trust. The most effective way to build that trust quickly and get it to an in-person meeting, hands down, is video. And just to give you an idea of how effective video is, I just opened up the data. The new opt-in that you send an introduction email to, trying to start a conversation, if it has a video, the open rate is 59.4%. If it doesn't, the open rate is only 27.4%. If there's a link in the email to click through and watch the video, 36.7% will click on the video. If there's not a video, only 16.7% will click on another link. So what we do is, knowing that video is the most effective, we build a nurturing sequence with a video or videos. The advisor automatically enrolls new opt-ins from their website into this sequence. It's all done behind the scenes with technology. They get that video message from the advisor. It's recorded once, but in a way that's personalized, because on the landing page, it shows the visitor's name. In the email, it has their name. The video feels one-to-one, even though it's one-to-many. And below that video, it says, do you have a question about this? What would you like to talk about? What are your concerns? They can submit a quick form, and then the advisor has a basis to call and talk to them or invite them into the office. That strategy, what we call a personal connection video campaign, is what's driving the fastest conversion from cold website or social media contact, new opt-in, to meetings, to actual bookings. And the combined overall performance there is about 120% better than anything else. So video is powerful.
Yeah. Thanks for diving in and breaking that apart. Have you had any of your Snappy Kraken clients that have inserted that somewhere into a dinner seminar sequence? And where would you put that in if it was from a mailer or maybe it's a Facebook ad into them showing up to a dinner seminar?
Yeah. So let's back up for a second on core principles, which you already know, but I don't want it to get missed. Nothing builds trust like in person. So if you're at a seminar or you've met somebody face to face, that's going to have the highest level of camaraderie, trust, openness. You need to take advantage of that. So if you're at a seminar, if somebody shows up there, your goal should be to book a meeting with them at that event. No doubt. You don't need this. But where we're using it, where our clients are using it, is the people who register but don't show up, and the people who say they'll book but don't, or book but don't show. So that's where we use this strategy. Because if you think about the hierarchy of trust, if in person's at the top, you step down a level, it's video, because they can see your face, they can hear your voice. Mm-hmm. Step down another level, it's voice. That's your phone calls, your podcasts. You step down another level, it's text. Unfortunately, what happens is most people just nurture prospects by text. Text doesn't build trust as well as voice. Voice doesn't build trust as well as video. Video doesn't build trust as well as in person. So for us, it's, hey, if you got a strategy for getting them in person, great. Next best thing, video. So no in-person strategy is complete. There's always going to be people who don't show, don't do what they say they're going to do. So just step down one level and work it the best way you can. So we have a sequence automatically. It's 8 steps, 8 weeks, 8 messages. Designed to build value for the advisor and in the financial planning relationship, or however this advisor is positioning what they do, wealth management, whatever it is, and then ultimately designed to book the appointment. So if somebody comes to a seminar, doesn't book right away, we try 8 times more to get them on autopilot. The advisor can go back to business with the clients. And then after that, if they have had now 9-10 opportunities and they haven't done anything, we just assume it's not the right time. We put them into general nurturing for a biweekly communication after that.
Cool. Okay. You mentioned text, as in text, you know, like words on an email or a piece of paper or whatever. Have you incorporated SMS, like mobile messages, with video drip sequences? Is that part of the data, or are you just talking video inside of emails? Have you guys looked at how that plays in? Or I don't know, does Snappy Kraken even allow for that?
Yeah, absolutely. When I said text before, I meant text-based content.
Yes. As in
what AI can generate and what third-party writers can generate that you may not have written, and therefore the trust level's low. Text messaging or SMS is a different thing altogether. And yes, we do use text messaging, and primarily in 2 places. The number one place we're using text messaging right now is on landing pages and websites. Here's what's really insane about that. When you put an opt-in on a landing page or a website that says, have a question, text me, your conversion rate on that call to action is 400% better than any other CTA. 400% better than any other CTA. So most advisors go to their website, you know what you're going to find? Subscribe to my newsletter. I put it on the table. I don't know how many advisors are listening to this, but their conversion rate on that is single digits at best. People don't want to give up their email address. They don't want to get spammed, but they will give up their cell phone number in an instant. We text so much. We're also accustomed to blocking numbers if we don't want to get texts. We text everybody. People don't even leave voicemails anymore. There's a stat that is not our stat, but it says 89% of consumers want to be able to text the businesses they work with. That's from Twilio. But we have found that to be true because that conversion rate sort of proves it. People will text their questions. And so we set up a dedicated text line. We use the office, the actual office number, because people will text business lines to try to get through. And then that's the first place. Let them text the business. Second place we're using it is for client service. So 97% response rate. from text messages, used for client service, appointment reminders, which is great for prospects as well, answering questions, reminders to clients, signature collection reminders, event RSVPs, seminar reminders, text message appointment reminders with directions to get to the office, click the link right to the office. So these are the types of things that advisors are using text messaging for. And it's average response time, 43 minutes on a text message, which is 100% faster than email. So there's definitely a place for text messaging today. I think advisors who aren't enabling that are missing out on opportunities.
Couldn't agree more. I heard this was years ago now, but Gary Vaynerchuk, definitely a student of him, and he was early. I feel like every social platform he's been early on in his career, you know, wrote the book Crush It, how he basically put his dad's liquor store in New Jersey on the map by doing YouTube wine reviews before that was a thing. And his exact words were, I think his phrase is, marketers ruin everything. And he was just talking about SMS. He's like, right now, not enough businesses are using it because it's basically a 100% open rate as opposed to email. But eventually that will get ruined. But we're in a very beautiful stage right now where most of the general public, you get a text, it's read. Like, I'm not going to sleep with unread texts. I think most other humans aren't either. So definitely an opportunity to more user-friendly business experience. So I love that you're already diving in there, and I'm sure that will only expand as Snappy Kraken continues to evolve. Any other thoughts just on SMS before we move off that topic? Just in general, if you were an advisor out there, what you'd be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. First of all, do it. Second of all, do it compliantly. There's definitely archiving and monitoring that's required. And you know, we built a platform for that purpose because you do it from your cell phone, you're liable to get yourself in trouble. And you don't have to live with your phone in your pocket texting clients all the time. That's why we use the business line. We created an interface for responding and having conversations for the staff can do it. Set up some autoresponders for after hours. So they know, hey, it's after hours. We don't respond to texts in the evening, but we'll respond first thing tomorrow. Things like that, just to make it manageable. It doesn't have to overwhelm you.
I would assume your interface is set up where it's not the advisor, the founder that's, I mean, it's basically like an online portal where different members of the team can monitor these SMSs over different business hours. Is that kind of the setup on the back end?
Yep. Integrates with your CRM. There's a dashboard. It's got, think of it like iMessage on steroids for sending one blast to everybody, but then having individual conversations with them in a manageable way. And then, of course, integrating those text messaging steps into our campaigns. So like, we have advisors who are running television ads. They're getting a bunch of leads off TV by text. They're responding, hey, automatically, thanks for requesting my ebook. Here it is. By the way, I can also send it to you by email. What's your best email address? Get the email address. Super. By the way, who am I talking to? What's your name? My name is Robert. Oh, hi, Brad. Excellent. I'll be in touch by email. Would you like a phone call about any of this? Here's a link to my calendar to book something. It's all by text message. It's all automated. So getting that into a broader strategy is really important. I mean, you can get low-hanging fruit just by putting it on your website and starting to use it for client service, but you can put it into a broader strategy and create conversational interactions right away with new prospects. And that's really what people expect. You got to have that human element in your marketing to connect with people as fast as you can. And when you're using the same channel they use to talk to their best friends and their mom, you're putting yourself in pretty good territory.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have it set up? So you've got integration, I'm assuming Redtail, Salesforce being kind of the two big ones I hear the most about in finance, already set up where you've got integrations for both of those?
Yeah, we do Redtail, Salesforce, and Wealthbox. It's funny, I feel bad for the advisors listening if they're not interested in our product, but I was here to talk about the strategy, but it is part of our product too. And the strategy is what drives our product. You know, we don't build things that don't help advisors grow. We're about organic growth. So yeah, this is tech. I saw a need for it in the industry. I started building this 2 years ago and we finally got it to market middle of 2023 in a really effective way.
Cool. And then last, We're geeking out here, but that's okay. That's what this is for. Are you able in the SMS then to, where based on those responses, oh, by the way, who am I talking to? Capture first name, Brad. Are you able to just pull that right over off the SMS into like plugging it into Redtail? Or is there a manual process still at this point to kind of fill in the details for the leads?
Yeah, we have campaigns that do that. So Snappy Kraken has the Convos text messaging application as a standalone product. They're integrated together. So you can do all of that when you use both products together. If you just use the text messaging application, it's only a push of less into the application. If you use Snappy Kraken for marketing automation with text messaging, you get all that bi-directional syncing.
Very cool. All right. We'll get off the nerd talk here, but it's okay. You know, I was an IT major, so sometimes I go there. As we kind of go back to your first stop at Platinum, and then you saw this need out there to kind of evolve kind of the tried and true into the digital age, any entrepreneurial lessons? Obviously, this is a show for independent financial advisors. So yes, they're financial advisors, but they're also entrepreneurs at the same time. That had to be a little bit of a scary leap. I mean, I remember, I think you were pretty dang close to when Triad was being formed. So 2020, I feel like that was about the same time Snappy Kraken, you were leaving kind of the known for the unknown. What lessons have you learned as an entrepreneur, like good, bad, and ugly along the way?
Oh man, that's such a broad question. It's hard to even know where to begin. I mean, I feel like I learn lessons every day. I guess I've been an entrepreneur now since 2009. So I started Platinum in 2009, and then I exited that in 2016 and started Snappy Kraken. So now, you know, we're coming up on our eighth year. So, you know, it's been a while. It's been a minute, 15 years, I guess. And the funny thing about it is I thought it would be easier. I always thought both times that I started these businesses, I thought it would be easier than it has been. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest lesson. Being an entrepreneur is hard. Building a business is hard. And people don't talk about how hard it is, because it's often perceived as weakness or something. And you just don't go out there talking about your problems, inventing. And some people do this whole build in public, and they'll cry on camera. Most of us aren't that type. And so it can be a little difficult and lonely, you know. And some days, it's funny, my buddy, he's an entrepreneur. He sent me a picture of a 7-year-old boy with a new BB gun. And he immediately turned it around backwards and shot himself in the crotch with it. And my friend said, this is how it feels to be an entrepreneur.
Some days for sure. Some days for sure.
But it's a lot of work. It's not for the faint of heart. And I think that's probably the biggest, like, be prepared for the work, do the work. The rewards don't come without the work. No growth without the work and the pain. That's just life. It applies in entrepreneurship. What you see other people having success with and winning, you don't see the grueling other side of it. So don't think you're alone. And I think the other big, big one is just, it's all about people, 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 people. Who you know, how you manage relationships, nurture relationships, forge meaningful connections, be true to those connections, maintain your integrity, be honest, do things the right way, and don't ever think that you can just run over people and it doesn't have consequences. Do the right thing by people and maintain those relationships, and it will propel your business. So I think those are the two biggest things for me, right? Like, take care of people, work hard, don't underestimate how hard it's going to be. Those are sort of maybe generalisms, but they just ring true for me every single day. And if you're not around the right people and you don't work hard, you will see things fall apart around you. And if you try to take shortcuts, you'll see it fall apart. So there's no shortcut for hard, good relationships.
Love that advice. You're right. Like, I think part of being an entrepreneur is this kind of vision and optimism. But to your point, I was really fortunate. Myself, my business partner, Sean, we both grew up in an incredible company and really saw that thing from employee 9 and employee 12 that, you know, now there's thousands of team members there. And I think it's almost this rose-colored glasses of, oh, this, yeah, no problem. This will, we can do this. And then there's those days, the BB gun days, to your analogy there. And it's tough some days. It's like, sometimes the point of like, why did I do this again? You know, why am I putting myself through this? So I love the realness in that answer. And it's true to any entrepreneur that you talk to that's honest, not this, oh yeah, everything's perfect world. So 8 years into the Snappy Kraken, how many total team members do you have now?
About 8.
About 80, 80? What you've scaled, I mean, just knowing you and, you know, us crossing paths over the years, you bring great talented people onto your team. You surround yourself with them. What are your thoughts? I see a lot of financial advisors where it goes from a single player game where they're the lead salesperson and everything else to where they actually start to become a business owner, a CEO, if that's the journey they want to go on. Now it's like you change the rules to the game and it's about leading and vision and empowering others and getting out of the way. What are some tips that you would share of how to acquire and keep great talent as you build a business?
I don't think that's one important thing. I think that's the thing. I would never have scaled this business to where it is, and it will never scale to where it wants to be, where we want it to be, without the great people that are on my team. And great people don't come cheap. They know their value. And if you don't take care of them, they'll leave you and you'll always be on a treadmill. So I've never been afraid to give up things to get great people. I've got partners right now that when I first started this business with them as partners and I was going to raise money, investors were like, "Why did you give away so much equity?" And I said, "Because I want them just as committed as me." And then when I've got employees right now with bigger salaries than me, and when finance team says, "Why do you pay this guy so much?" I say, "Well, look at what he does for the company. How much do you think it would cost us to lose him?" And I think this is where lifestyle creep can really be a problem. I've maintained a pretty modest lifestyle. If I was trying to pull down $3 million a year for myself and just buy a new 65-foot yacht and exotic cars, I'd be fleecing my business. And it would be spiraling, but you give that money away and you have a long-term goal. You play the long game, get the right people in, be generous with them, keep them in, hold them accountable to reach goals that drive the value of the business, and you'll be building a really nice retirement for yourself. You'll have a really good exit multiple. So I think that's it for me, is like, treat people great, pay them well, don't be afraid to hire above your pay grade, and it's an old Jack Welch quote, but hire people smarter than you and get out of the way. I mean, I don't know how our platform works. I know enough to sell it. And I know enough to make sure that we have data security. But my partner, Brad, that guy, he engineered a system. We have a proprietary marketing automation system that's API first that has thousands of connections active all the time. Millions and millions of page views anytime in a 5-minute window. It's not easy to do. I couldn't do it. He does it. And you know what? He's been right alongside me for almost a decade. Same with my business partner, Angel. You know, he's a better marketer than me. He's a better technician than me. Been right beside me every step of the way. And when I met with him, both of those guys really a few months back, and I said, "Hey, how are we doing? It's been a long way. What's our outcome? How are we tracking? What does an exit mean for us now? What does it mean for us in 5 years? How committed are you?" I don't have to worry that they're going to get enticed away by a better salary. And to me, that's everything. Like, you can trust the people around you. You know they're by your side. You're going into battle and things work out. And I've seen that in my last business. It didn't work out that way because my partners and I didn't see eye to eye on the value of people, frankly. Now I do see that with my partners. And, you know, I actually just sent an offer letter to somebody that is my biggest hire I've ever made. He's going to take our company to another level. Never hired anybody at this pay grade with this level of experience before. A little scary. But you know what he told me? He said, "I've got a lot of offers. I'm going to come work for you because I've met with your board members. I've met with your CFO. I've met with your president. I've met with your chief product officer, and you have an amazing team." And he said, "I hope you don't take it for granted." Now, he's older than me. He's like 52. And I said, "You know what? I don't. And I just think if you strip away all the noise in business down to its very basis element, all you got left is people and relationships. So cherish them.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes that we say a lot at Triad is play long-term games with long-term people. It's like compound interest, except it's relationships, right? And like what I just heard from that, Robert, was the two guys that really, Brad and Angel, were those the two guys early on at Snappy Kraken? Like, you knew those were long-term people. And I feel like there's a shift in just the world of business right now. Like, there was these big corporations where it was like, here's this big conglomerate with this CEO. And it's like, what's the least amount we can pay to fill this position and this position? And they look at almost like cogs in a machine, like, oh, just swap that one out, throw this one in. I feel like business is evolving to where we're kind of getting to this new era of business. Sean and I set aside a big chunk of equity because we wanted alignment with our team, that it wasn't like the two founders of the company were the guys getting rich and flying around on private jets, but it was, hey, if you're here and you believe in this do business, do life mission, and we want that for our Triad members and we want it for our team, and it's not easy, but we're committed to that mission. And guess what? If that's for you and you're in and you're willing to come into this small company to take on these large institutions in finance, like, we want you to have a seat at the table. Like, you deserve it as much as any of us. And we found that to be very different. And it's cool. I didn't know that. I didn't know that you kind of had a similar model with some of your early talent that you brought on. But I found it to be super refreshing because there's no guilt for me, the founder. I'm not like, I feel like you'd almost feel guilty if you were there, like, building a business where you're the one that the proportions aren't equal as far as the outcome and the opportunity. So I don't know from a recruiting standpoint if you found that to be true as well when you're bringing talent in. Do you see it just creates a different sort of conversation?
For sure. By the way, I love that. Long-term games with long-term people. It's funny because I pontificated for like 3 minutes and then you said it in one sentence. So,
well, I borrowed it from Naval Ravikant. So I follow him on Twitter. He's one of the most intelligent people out there. So that's where I borrowed it from.
I like it. I like it. Quippy quote there. Yeah, it does change the dynamic. And I think besides the guilt even, which some people don't feel that, I think I would feel that as well. It also selfishly gives you leverage. I mean, how are you going to ask somebody to pour themselves into your business and into your clients with no real beneficial outcome for themselves, just for a W-2? How are you going to ask that? But when you're recruiting people and giving them meaningful equity, I mentioned this person I'm hiring, I spent a good bit of time negotiating an equity package with him, which is a big part of his comp because he wants a certain outcome. And I helped him model how we get to that outcome for him. Well, now he's going to come in. And if we're not achieving our goals, who's he thinking about? Himself. How he's going to achieve those goals. And when I say, look, we agreed that we were going to do A, B, and C to get to this outcome for you and for the company, are you going to do your part or not? That's a different conversation. Or when you go to somebody and say, what are your goals for next year? Okay. How much wealth do you want to build? How much income do you want? All right, let's put a plan in place for it. Whether it's a career growth plan, whether it's a equity outcome plan, that's the stuff that I believe makes a big difference in culture. Everybody's suddenly thinking about the outcomes of their actions and their investment in their work every day.
Yeah, I've heard the phrase, show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome or the behavior. And it's so true. I remember I coached an advisor, this is way back when, and just he was like, well, you know, I want them to do this and they won't do that. I'm like, well, look at the pay structure. Like, you're misaligned there. And I think at the most basic, to your point, it's like, if I can create a model to where when the company wins, so do the key team members, it actually simplifies the equation. It's like, hey, look, is this, if it's best for the business, it's also best for you. And it just like takes all these, I'm sure you've been in these crazy annual bonus. I remember my first job right out of college, I worked for Payless Shoe Source at their corporate office, now defunct, now bankrupt. And every year it was a new random bonus structure passed down from the corporate hierarchy. And you're like, okay, here's the new make-believe game we're playing this year. Nobody likes that. Just, I feel like that's a lot of the American corporate structure that I feel like is slowly dying off. So, okay. So let's switch gears here a little bit. By the way, love those shares. Thanks for the honesty and realness in that. I just, says a lot about like who you are and why you built such a successful business in such a short amount of time. I look at you as one of the guys that is really on the leading edge of just finance and tech. And obviously COVID accelerated that dramatically for everybody. But if you're a financial advisor out there right now, and you're looking out the next 3, 5, 10 years with where this thing's going, you mentioned AI earlier, what would you be thinking about? What questions would you be asking yourself if you were a founder out there?
Yeah, it does depend a lot on the advisor's model. We work with RIA aggregators and we work with single practitioners. And so those things do change what types of questions I think I'd be asking and the type of work I would be doing. But I'll try to stick with what I think applies to everybody as much as I can, which is consumer expectations are really changing, and they're changing fast, and they're very high. And most advisors' experiences aren't up to that level. And so regardless of what stage of business you're at, the technology stack that makes everything really easy for clients, the account opening process and the reporting and the servicing, and then the relevancy of the communications. I'll just put it in a marketing context for a minute. What if you have clients that are getting your newsletter and you're including things that aren't relevant to them because it's for a different age group or for a different life stage or for different goals? They start tuning it out because they realize it's not relevant. That happens every day with advisor newsletters. So what's a simple example of how to do it better? Well, when you have good technology that has your lists segmented and people have the option to subscribe to certain things and unsubscribe from other things, and you're asking them for their preferences up front and tailoring it, and then you're using AI to make that content more personalized, all of a sudden now what they're getting is relevant, performance is better. Or you have clients who don't check email, but they text. We just talked about that earlier. What are you doing to make it possible for them? Or they don't want to come in and wet sign. Why don't you have a digital account opening experience? Or there's a myriad set of examples like that. So consumers expect things fast, accurate, easy, high quality. And everything in your business needs to be looked at through that lens. And the advisors who don't have that will not grow as fast. They also won't have as much scale. And the price of advice is under pressure. So how are you going to make sure that you're not a victim of that? Probably by figuring out how to scale your business more effectively. And regardless of what stage I'm at, probably today, I'd be thinking about, where am I going to get my scale from? How am I going to create a really great experience end-to-end for new clients and existing clients? And then lastly, we live in a society where human connection is threatened. People are lonely, lonelier than ever. The pandemic really created some weird consequences. I saw an article recently about the new Apple enhanced reality goggles. I forget the name of them already.
They look like ski masks and they're all over YouTube right now. But yeah, we'll throw it in the show notes.
Yeah, I forget the name of them. But the headline was bullish on Apple, bearish on society. And you know, that stuck with me, of course, as a marketer. But I think about that. People are craving real connections. And the advisory relationship is a really special type of relationship. It's based on trust. You have a doctor. That relationship has to be based on trust because they're doing surgery on you. They know intimate details about you. Your future health is in their hands. It's very akin to a financial advisory relationship. You're dealing with complex emotions. You're dealing with their future financial stability. And so that is the edge we have. Real human connections based on trust and intimacy. So I think that's the counterpoint to my earlier comment about technology and experience at scale. How do you forge meaningful connections? How do you maintain meaningful connections? How do you scale the human side of advice? And if you can do that, what you'll find is that people are going to respond to you because they're not getting that other places. Everybody's sort of being relegated to this like cold, faceless world. If you can create a warm, safe place for people where they feel that connection, you're going to draw clients in. They're going to trust you. They're going to refer to you. And technology can make that more possible. I've told a lot of people, they ask me, how do you define marketing? What's marketing? And I say, it's human connection at scale. Human connection at scale. So those are the things when I think about the future, stronger, more meaningful connections through technology and a great experience. That's the firm of the future. That's the advisor of the future.
Let's rewind a little bit. You said something I think is spot on, which is almost the customer experience, let's say 1 to 10, let's say 10 is like, you hear it like the Apple Store experience, you know, where they've thought about a lot of these friction points of like going to a cash register, for example. You don't have to do that in an Apple Store. What do you think is driving that in finance, which has always lagged when it comes to technology because of all the compliance and suitability and regulations. But what do you think's kind of something that advisors could get away with back in the day where they're just like clients aren't cool with it anymore? What do you think's driving those behaviors?
More than anything, I think it's nearly two decades with the iPhone. Mm. The expectation for fast technology, intuitive interfaces, the ability to do things like load up E-Trade and be trading in seconds, the research that you can access. You know, advisors used to rely on sort of being the source of, you come to me for my market commentary, you come to me for access, you come to me for insights you can't get anywhere else, you come to me to place those trades for you, and I'll charge you $20 for every trade I place. And now, knowing that all of that is so commoditized and so accessible, I think people have just got a different expectation now. And I think that's a lot of where it comes from.
Mm. Hey, you summed that up really well, because I couldn't agree more that the iPhone did completely change the game. Like, you look at all of the businesses, the multi-billion dollar businesses that were born because of the iPhone. Uber, prime example. I remember the first time one of my buddies was like, dude, like, you can order a car. Back in those days, it was black car only, right? Right from your phone. And, you know, we were out doing some financial event. I was like, dude, this is a game changer. I'll never have to like hunt down. Remember how hard it was to get a taxi back in the day? If you weren't like in New York City, you'd have to like get a phone book and go to the bar and like call them. And it was like the most annoying thing. But I think that's spot on. It's like all of the businesses born out of the convenience of an iPhone. It's just like, it's just become the expectation now. All right. So we haven't gotten to the book yet. And so I want to hit that. We were joking before we went live. I didn't even realize like you cranked out a book the last couple of years. So let's get to that. Blend Out is the name, From Ordinary to Irresistible, How Advisors Can Market Like the Greatest Brands in the World. First off, I think I know the thought process behind the title, but give me the concept of the title. And then maybe like we pluck a couple ideas out of the book that we haven't hit on already.
Yeah, sounds good. The concept is that the world is crowded. There's a lot of noise, especially online. And how do you get noticed and be remembered? You have to blend out. You have to be different. You have to stand out. It's just a play on words, a little bit of marketing. Mm-hmm. And the greatest brands in the world do that really well. They're in the right places where their audience is, and they show up in bold and memorable ways. So I take essentially three qualities that make that possible. I use actual examples from big brands, and then I apply them to financial advisors. And those three qualities are boldness, uniqueness, and memorability. And each of those is different, a little nuanced. Boldness, standing out, getting that attention, getting the eyeballs on the brand, on you. Second, making sure you have a different position, a different angle, different packaging, using either who you are or how you do business as that uniqueness so that they don't just notice you, but then they recognize that you're different. And then third, how do you get remembered? And that's where the emotional component comes in. How do you create lasting memories and claim some mental real estate for yourself so that when people think financial advice, they think of you?
Mm. Because you mentioned some of the greatest brands in the world. Do you have some case studies or examples in the book that might be a brand that it hits either the boldness, the uniqueness, the memorable?
Yeah, I do. I break down a lot of different examples, everything from, we talk about Red Bull and how they show up where their audience is and how they go about their marketing. And then we talk about certain ad campaigns that have been done by highlighter companies. There's examples in there from actual financial advisors who've done a really good job, some sports franchises. There's quite a bit. It's not a short book. So we do take examples in each of those areas and show how they work and how they stand out. Like, I'll go back to the Red Bull example because I haven't read the book in a couple of years, but that one's at the tip of my tongue here, which is basically, if you think about Red Bull, they were started over in China and it was a very unknown small brand. And as an energy drink brand, you know, they had to figure out where to create brand exposure to basically blow up. And that's what they did. They brought in a very seasoned advertising executive to work there. And he started going to, you probably remember back in the 90s, all of the thrill sports and extreme sports competitions. And that's where they started showing up because they were an energy drink brand. And all of a sudden, Red Bull became synonymous with peak performance and high energy sports, and still is to this day. Even though there's lots of other energy drinks, you can see Monster kind of use the same play out of the same book. But Red Bull was the first, and they did it well. Advisors, it's similar. You have a totally different market, totally different approach. But where are your clients showing up? And what are they interested in? And how do you create an emotional connection to your brand with those clients? And then I break down examples. Like for advisors who have a charity that is near and dear to them, how do they show up at charity events in a visible way so that an emotional connection is formed with the audience who cares about that charity, which they also care about, and their brand is connected with? That's one example. And there's lots of other ways too to accomplish that. So we take those examples, we break it down, and we apply it to the financial advice business.
Yeah, I just had a real life example of that. Actually, an advisor out of Florida. And during COVID, typical 80s kid, I collected sports cards growing up. A lot of people in COVID get bored, just like me, no sports on TV. And so I dive back into my old sports cards and then went like really, really hard where I started like looking at it like an asset class. So, but anyway, there's a company called PSA that does basically grades the quality of the sports card. So you submit the sports card, they slab it, and like a perfect 10 is like a flawless card. Well, so they put out a monthly magazine. There's a family office, an advisor in there who's a big collectible and sports card guy, like a multi-million dollar collection. And right there, he's got an ad that says, hey, I'm a collector. I'm also an advisor that runs a family office. If you have a seven-figure plus sports card or memorabilia collection, I'm your guy. Only financial advisor in that entire magazine. And so I connect with them. We have a great conversation. I'm like, dude, this is great marketing. Like, this is your target market. It's a hobby, but it also applies to what you do for a living. And I love that because you're talking about Red Bull. So how does that apply to financial services? There's like a real world example of a real life advisor that's doing very well for himself that just found that niche and then marketed in a way that, you know, we call it dog whistle languaging. It stood out to the right people. So yeah, that's where my head went just from that example. Yeah, well,
was that Tom Ruge by chance?
It was. Do you know him?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I interviewed him at Jolt Conference. So we do the big marketing conference.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. On stage, I interviewed him about that because it is a perfect example. And it's not like every advisor can go rip that off. He's a real collector.
A real, real collection, like 1952 tops, like multi-million dollar collection. That's cool. Well, he probably was he in the Villages? Because I know you guys were in the Villages, one of your offices. Was he in that same?
Cool. Yeah. We used to compete with him in the financial advice. Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah. Was that last year's Jolt? Because I'm upset I missed that. I was at the... It was? Oh my gosh. My loss.
Always come to Jolt Conference.
Hey, on that note, we should touch on that before we wrap here. So yeah, for those that... We obviously have hit a lot of snappy cracking. You guys do a big live event, live experience every year. The last year's was in Vegas, which I was fortunate enough that you gave me an invite out there, Robert. So I appreciate that. And it was done first rate, actually. I took some notes. I don't know if I told you this or not, just some of the cool things you did. I think it was May 4th, right? Because you had the stormtroopers there, like you played off that. And so I took some notes and shared them with our experiences team. And I was like, hey, the Snappy Kraken team did this really well. We should replicate some of this stuff. But is it always in Vegas? I know it's an annual thing, or does it move around?
Yeah. So it's going to be actually not this year. We are doing it next in 2025. So June 9 through 11, and it's going to be in Nashville. So June 9 through 11th, Nashville, 2025.
Nice. And what, like, if it's like, hey, here's the purpose, here's why we put this thing on. You've got a bunch of advisors listening in. So who are the advisors that should go and why should they go?
Yeah, Jolt is about how to generate organic growth. Everything is about either brand, marketing, automation, events, anything that drives organic growth. And we bring in the best experts from around the industry. It's not a Snappy Kraken show. We even have our competitors there. Anybody that's really a leader in any area of marketing is invited, and we invite them to speak and exhibit. We have video experts, podcasting experts, direct mail experts. They are all on stage. They're all there. And it's a great place to come and get inspired. It's also a very creative atmosphere, lots of energy, and come and network with advisors who care about growth as much as you do. And learn how they're doing it. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. I remember literally within walking in within 5 minutes, there were like 15 people that I'm like, dude, haven't seen you in a while. How you been? And, you know, a lot of former podcast guests. I know I ran into like Jason Lajita, Taylor Schulte, like a bunch, like within like the first, you know, people that are doing cool things in finance. So I highly recommend it. So this is not a paid advertisement. I was there. It's definitely worth checking out for you advisors listening in. So cool. Well, as we wrap, Robert, this is the Do Business, Do Life podcast. I know we touched on it right at the beginning of the conversation, but I would love to hear your definition. Like, what is Robert Sophia's definition of what it means to do business and do life?
I wish I'd known that was going to be the last question earlier, because I would have thought about it more. Everybody's definition of what success looks like is different. So for me, do business, do life means I'm living my personal definition of success. And that's both in my work and in my life. So there are things that I love that enrich me. They are sometimes in my work, the things I create, the people I create them with, the outcomes I can affect. And I get out of bed in the morning, I get a message from somebody that says, my clients just emailed me and said, this is the coolest website they've ever seen. I'm getting more leads than ever. I'm getting more referrals than ever. And I feel like I'm accomplishing something. I'm really helping the industry. That fires me up on the business side. That's, to me, that's success. My employees tell me they finally made so much money, they need a financial advisor. That's success, right? They've got so much equity, their retirement is set. That's success to me in business. But that's not total success. Business success alone is not everything. So that's where the life comes in, right? I get emotionally drained. I should be able to walk out my back door and go for a hike. I can. There's hundreds of thousands of acres of national forest behind me and hundreds of thousands of acres in front of me. And I can hop on my four-wheeler and shoot off in the woods if I want to. And for me, that's part of it. My son, I have lunch with my son every single day. I get up and kiss my wife goodbye every single morning. And I'm back at home without a commute. That's success for me. I built a business that's 100% remote. I can live wherever I want and work from wherever I want. So I think we live in a time where technology gives people a lot of choices. And so to me, I guess do business, do life means you make good choices so you can do work that you love and live a lifestyle that you love. And that's really enriching.
Mm, well said. Hey, dude, off the cuff, I don't think you need any prep, man. You nailed that. So couldn't agree more with your sentiment. So Robert, man, it's always fun. We don't talk enough, but every time we do, I just enjoy every minute. So thanks for hopping on here, sharing your wisdom with the audience, and truly look forward to the next time we get to connect, whether it's via Zoom like this or in person. So thanks for carving out the time.
It was my pleasure, Brad. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Take care. Thanks for checking out this week's episode. On to this week's featured review. It comes to us from iTunes user TBFP7, 5 stars. They say, transformative as a financial planner and dad. It's refreshing to have found Brad's podcast. I think our industry could benefit from figuring out how to balance life and business. Appreciate Brad's perspective and the value of the guests that he has interviewed so far. Keep up the great work for our industry. Well, thanks so much for leaving the review, taking the time to do that. It really does help the show get found. So thank you for that. And yeah, selfishly, no different from you. Being a guy in finance, being a dad myself, some of this podcast is very self-serving, and it's just me trying to grow a business while at the same time making sure I don't sacrifice that which is most important to me. And that's how I show up as a husband and how I show up as a dad. And trust me, there's many days I do not get that right, but I'm on the pursuit to consistently get better and definitely more intentional on that mission each and every day. So if I can bring people onto the show, guests onto the show that help me and also help you, that's a win-win. So thanks so much for taking the time to leave the review. And until next time, we'll see ya. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Do Business, Do Life podcast. As we wrap, for access to show notes, transcripts, and exclusive content from all of our show's guests, don't forget to visit bradleyjohnson.com/podcast. And before you go, I've got a quick favor to ask. If you're liking the podcast, you can help support the show by leaving your rating and review on iTunes. Not only do we read every single comment, but this will help the show rank and get discovered by new listeners and other financial advisors out there that can benefit from the show. Trust me, it really does help.
So thanks again for joining, and be sure to tune in next week for another episode. These conversations are intended to provide financial advisors with ideas, strategies, concepts, and tools that could be incorporated into their advisory practice. Advisors are ultimately responsible for ensuring implementation of anything discussed is in accordance with any and all regulatory and compliance responsibilities and obligations.